Welcome to The Word for Today, the broadcast ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. Pastor Chuck is currently leading us on a verse-by-verse venture through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, we'll be continuing with The Reign of Abijah as we pick up in 2 Chronicles, chapter 13, verse 1. And now with today's message, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
It is interesting that as we are going through the Chronicles, actually it is sort of a repetition of the Kings, the books of Kings, in that it does cover, again, the history of the kings of Judah. And, of course, we did look at them somewhat in the book of the Kings of Judah and Israel. The Chronicles are more of the kingdom of Judah than the kingdom of Israel, and so we'll be following close with the kings of Judah. In chapter 13, it came to pass that when Jeroboam, the king of the northern tribes of Israel, was in his 18th year of his reign, that Abijah began to reign over Judah. So the reign of Rehoboam was not that long, actually, an 18-year reign. They began to reign about the same time. And in the 18th year of Jeroboam's reign, Abijah began to reign over Judah. He reigned 3 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Micaiah, and here it is, Micaiah, the daughter of Uriel. She was the granddaughter of Absalom. So sometimes you will see her called Micaiah, the daughter of Absalom, but they really don't have a term for granddaughter, so they say the daughter of Absalom, but through Uriel. And there was war between Abijah and Jeroboam. Now, from 2 Kings, we find out that this fellow Abijah isn't really as solid with the Lord as he could be. He followed in the sins of his fathers, it says. Not much told us in Kings concerning Abijah, but quite a bit. That is in 1 Kings, actually, quite a bit here in Chronicles. So there was this war, northern and southern kingdom. Now, Rehoboam was forbidden from going to war. It would appear that when Abijah came to the throne, that Jeroboam figured that it was a time of weakness, the change of kings, and a good time to attack and to perhaps take the southern kingdom and bring the whole thing under his control. He had an extremely large army, 800,000 men, armed men, valiant men, ready for war. And so with the death of Rehoboam, the ascension of Abijah, he figured that that was a good opportunity to attack. And so Abijah set the battle in array with an army of valiant men of war, 400,000 chosen men. Jeroboam set his troops in array against him with 800,000 chosen men who were mighty men of valor. And so Abijah stood up upon Mount Zimmerim, which was in the area of Ephraim, and he said, "Hear me, Jeroboam and all of Israel." So this is one of those kind of things that you try to talk things out first. And if you can talk your way out of war, great. And war should always be a last resort after all of the talks have failed. So Abijah is addressing Jeroboam, the people of Israel. And he said, "Ought you not to know that Jehovah, the God of Israel, gave the kingdom over to Israel, to David forever, even to him and his sons by a covenant of salt?" Now, it would seem that Jeroboam is trying to destroy the Davidic kingdom. Don't you realize that God is the one that established the dynasty of David, the house of David over Israel forever. Now, we do know that God's promise was a conditional promise. He would establish it forever if they continued to walk in the ways of the Lord. It was a conditional promise. Abijah doesn't really recognize a conditional promise by a covenant of salt. Now, when they would offer the sacrifices, they would always salt the sacrifices as a preservative. So the idea of the covenants of salt was a preserving or a covenant that would not cease. It was a continuing covenant, the covenant of salt. It was one that was preserved. And thus the idea of the covenant of salt, one that was to be preserved. Yet, he declares, Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, the servant of Solomon, the son of David, has risen up and hath rebelled against his Lord. And there are gathered unto him vain men, the children of Belial, and they have strengthened themselves against Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, when Rehoboam was young, tender-hearted, could not withstand them. So they caught Rehoboam at a time of his youth, tender-hearted, didn't have the strength to withstand him, they rebelled. And now you think to withstand the kingdom of Jehovah in the hand of the sons of David, and you are a great multitude, but you have with you your golden calves, which Jeroboam made for your gods. Have you not cast out the priests of the Lord, the sons of Aaron, the Levites, and you have made priests after the manner of the nations of the other lands, so that whosoever comes to consecrate himself with a young bullock and seven rams, the same may be a priest of them that are no gods. And so as he is addressing them, he is showing actually how they've turned away from the true and the living God, from Jehovah. That Jeroboam has set up these golden calves, and that they did expel the priest out of the land of Israel. We remember under the reign of Rehoboam, where the priest from the northern area left their cities, the suburbs there, and they joined with Judah. But then in the northern kingdom, the priesthood was just up for anybody. Anybody could be priest. Just bring an offering and you could become a priest. And priests who were really no priests, but they were, I guess, even enough, because the gods that they were priests of really weren't gods anyhow. So what difference does it make? So pretty even. Have you not cast out the priest of Jehovah, the sons of Aaron and the Levites, made the priest out of the manner of nations and so forth, so that any man who comes to consecrate himself may be a priest of them that are no gods? But as for us, Jehovah is our God. So Abijah acknowledges a continual allegiance to and a reliance upon Jehovah. And we have not forsaken him. The priests which minister unto Jehovah are the sons of Aaron, the Levites, and they wait upon their business. We are following after the covenant that God made with our fathers. They burn unto the Lord every morning and every evening the burnt sacrifices, the sweet incense. They offer the showbread that is set in order on the pure table, and the candlestick of gold with the lamps thereof to burn every evening, for we keep the charge of Jehovah our God, but you have forsaken him. So he is plainly and clearly declaring, look, you've got us outnumbered, except the Lord is on our side. You have forsaken the Lord. You've cast out the priests of the Lord. You're not following after the Lord at all. You're serving false gods. We have continued faithful to Jehovah. We still have the offerings that are being made daily. We still have the covenant of the priesthood with the house of Aaron, and they offer the sacrifices, and they take care of the worship and so forth, and you have forsaken him. We still serve him. And behold, he said, God himself is with us as our captain. Now, he's again, as I said, trying to talk his way out of the battle. His priests are with us that sound their trumpets to cry the alarm against you. O children of Israel, do not fight against Jehovah, the God of your fathers, for you shall not prosper. Now, he's really laying some heavy truths on them. We are serving Jehovah. He is the captain of our hosts. Don't fight against Jehovah, the God of your fathers. It's interesting to me how many people who do fight against Jehovah, the God of their fathers. The prophet Isaiah said, woe unto him who fights with his maker. Woe unto the man who has set his heart to fight against God. And yet we look around and we see how many people have deliberately set their hearts against God. How many people are at war, at a real conscious war with God, deliberate war against God. There are those who are seeking to corrupt our whole nation. They have set themselves to fight against God. But the scripture says, woe unto him who fights with his maker. The thing about fighting with God, how in the world could you ever hope to win? I mean, that has to be the height of folly for a man to set himself against God and to think that I can fight God. And so he is warning them, fight not against Jehovah, God of your fathers, because you can't prosper. But Jeroboam, during this whole thing, was using this opportunity for treachery. While he was up there talking, trying to come to some kind of an appeasement so that the war would not be fought, trying to get things settled without a battle, Jeroboam had secretly sent some troops around behind the armies of Judah, planning to just circle them and attack them from all sides. And it's just not practice. It's when you're talking at a peace conference, you've gathered together to talk things out, to actually go ahead and prepare for war is unconscionable. But yet Jeroboam, while he was talking and trying to establish peace, was actually already engaged in his plan of battle. Much like during World War II, when the Japanese ambassador came over to the United States and was with Roosevelt and all talking about peace and resolving the problems when Pearl Harbor took place, while the fellow was here supposedly on some kind of a peace mission, the ships were on their way with their planes to bomb Pearl Harbor. And so much the same kind of a sneaky attack that we have here with Jeroboam. He caused an ambushment to come around behind them so that they were in front of Judah and the ambushment was behind them. And so when the men of Judah looked back, behold, the battle was in front and behind, and they cried unto Jehovah, and the priest sounded with the trumpets. Then the men of Judah gave a shout, and as the men of Judah shouted, it came to pass that God smote Jeroboam and all of Israel before Abijah and Judah, and the children of Israel fled before Judah, and God delivered them into their hand. And Abijah and his people slew them with a great slaughter, so there fell down slain of Israel 500,000 chosen men. Never in the history of a battle in the Bible were so many men slain in a battle. 500,000 of the men of Israel. It just decimated their troops. Thus, the children of Israel were brought under at that time, and the children of Judah prevailed because, and the reason is given, they relied upon Jehovah, the God of their fathers. And so Abijah pursued after Jeroboam. He took cities from him, the city of Bethel, where, of course, they had set up the golden calf, and the towns around it, the city of Jeshanah with the towns around it, and Ephraim with the towns that were around that vicinity. Neither did Jeroboam recover strength again. It was all over for Jeroboam, and in the days of Abijah, the Lord struck him, and he died. So it actually brought the end of the reign of Jeroboam in the northern kingdom. Now, Abijah waxed mighty. He married 14 wives. He had 22 sons, 16 daughters, and the rest of the acts of Abijah and his ways and his sayings are written in the story of the prophet Iddo. Now, evidently they are learning something. Solomon carried this multiplicity of wives to its max. Rehoboam, his son, was a little more restrained than his father. And now Abijah is more restrained than Rehoboam. And really, after this, we do not find the multiplicity of wives like this. It's sort of the end of that. Women started getting control of the issue. Chapter 14, so Abijah slept with his fathers. They buried him in the city of David, and Asa, his son, reigned in his stead. And in the days of the reign of Asa, for 10 years, the land was quiet. And Asa did that which was good and right in the eyes of the Lord. For he took away the altars of the strange gods, the high places. He broke down the images and cut down the Asherims, the idols of the female goddesses, the multi-breasted idols of the sex goddesses. And he commanded Judah to seek Jehovah, the God of their fathers, and to do the law and the commandment. Now, it must be noted at this point that though he did initiate this reform, it was not as yet a complete reform. There was sort of a surface reformation, which oftentimes takes place in the history of a people or of a nation. There are reforms that are initiated, but they are not really truly deep reforms. They are surface reforms. And under the guidance of strong leadership, many times there come certain surface reforms among the people. But unless it's really down into the heart of the nation and into the hearts of the people, those kind of reformations are not lasting. And so we will come to the second reform of Asa in the 15th chapter. He took away out of all of the cities of Judah the high places, the images, and the kingdom was quiet before him. And so during this period of peace, during this period of strength, they decided to increase their strength by building the fenced cities in Judah, for the land had rest, and he had no war in those years because Jehovah had given him rest. Therefore he said unto Judah, let us build these cities and make walls around them with the towers and the gates and the bars while the land is yet quiet before us, because we have sought Jehovah our God, and we have sought him, and he has given us rest on every side. So they built and prospered. So seeking God, they had peace. They had prosperity, always true. Righteousness exalts a nation. Sin is a reproach to any people. And as a nation seeks God, the nation will experience prosperity. It'll experience peace. But as sure as a nation forgets God, there's going to be turmoil. There's going to be crises. And Asa had an army of men that bore targets and spears out of Judah, 300,000. And out of Benjamin, those that bore shields and drew bows, 280,000. So all of them were mighty men of valor. Now, it is interesting. Those fellows from the tribe of Judah had these big targets as shields. They were sort of a full body kind of a thing. And they used the spears, the bigger guys, stronger. These guys from Benjamin, a little smaller, they used bows. They can hit their enemy from a distance. And they had shields that they used in defense. So total of course, 300,000 of Judah and 580,000 total army. So it has grown from the time of Abijah.
We'll return with more of our study through the book of 2 Chronicles in our next lesson, as Pastor Chuck Smith continues his verse-by-verse venture through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of today's message, or perhaps you'd like to order a copy for that special friend or loved one, you can do so by simply contacting one of our customer service representatives, and they'd be more than happy to assist you with the ordering details. Simply call 1-800-272-WORD. And phone orders can be taken Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-9673. And for your added convenience, you can order online anytime when you go to thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse through the additional resources that include Bible studies, commentaries, CDs, DVDs, and so much more. Once again, that's The Word for Today online at thewordfortoday.org. And for those of you who still prefer to write, you can use our mailing address, which is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And be sure to include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck Smith continues his verse-by-verse study through the book of 2 Chronicles. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. Now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
Let's spend time in prayer, individually, corporately, and let's seek the Lord that we might find Him and that we might see His work in our midst. God bless you and keep you in His love, fill you to overflowing with His Spirit, and know this, your labor in the Lord is never in vain.
I just got the Word for Today Bible, and I'm really enjoying the commentaries by Pastor Chuck. Listen to this one from the book of Joshua.
You see, God has already gone before me. God is already there tomorrow. Joshua is telling them, tomorrow God is going to do wonders in your eyes. And that's the thing that I need to hold in my mind.
Yeah, that's really good. I have one too from the book of Nehemiah.
So they read in the book of the law of God distinctly, and then they gave the sense and caused them to understand the reading. That's what expository teaching is all about. That's what we have devoted our ministry to, the study of God's Word.
The Word for Today Bible is available in leather and paperback editions with more commentaries by Pastor Chuck, simply teaching the Word of God. For more information, please call The Word for Today at 1-800-272-WORD. You can read a preview of The Word for Today Bible by visiting thewordfortoday.org.
This program has been sponsored by The Word for Today in Costa Mesa, California.